Welcome to the Big World Made Small podcast for the adventure traveler. I'm thrilled you're here. My name is Jason Elkins, and in addition to being your host, I'm also a former U.S. Army paratrooper, third-generation commercial hot air balloon pilot, paramotor pilot, ex-Montana fly fishing guide, advanced open water scuba diver, and a full-time nomad that's visited more than 30 countries on six continents. As a seasoned adventure travel expert with a passion for creating and sharing meaningful experiences, I'm on a quest to impact the lives of adventure travelers, tour operators they rely on, and the communities that host them. Every week, I bring you exclusive interviews with fascinating adventure tourism experts who have agreed to share their personal stories, favorite destinations, and some invaluable travel insights they've picked up along the way. We'll enjoy a casual conversation, create some connections, and likely share some laughs. It's my hope that by the end of each episode, this big world will feel just a bit smaller. Let's get started, shall we? Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Big World Made Small podcast for the adventure traveler. Super excited to have all of you back here listening to the show today. And very honored to have our guest today is Daniel Buitron. Daniel, welcome to the show. Super excited to have you here. Where are you speaking with us from right now?
Likewise. Thank you for the invitation. I'm really excited to talk to you about Colombia today. So right now, I'm located in New York State, actually.
Okay, very cool. And what is... We're going to jump in. We're going to cover a bunch of things, but you're in New York. It is early November when we're recording this.
Correct.
So are you ready? You're ready to get on a plane and come back down to Colombia where the weather's
absolutely blowing. I've already got my plan set for December. I actually will be there in the first week of December. I was there in July. So I go back often. Obviously, we're talking about Colombia as a destination and the business that I do. I have the team down there, so I go down there often. And also, December in Colombia is fantastic, not only for the weather, but all the Christmas stuff.
That's true. And December is fantastic here, and it's not so fantastic in New York. I lived in New York for a while. I have some memories of that. Yeah. I'm in, as we were speaking before I hit the record button there, I'm in Medellin right now, which is the city of eternal spring. And it's like any month of the year is amazing here. And I'm sure there's some seasonal fluctuations around the country, but I tell you, I'd much rather be here in December than just about anywhere. So when you come down, we'll have to get together for a coffee.
Absolutely.
So Daniel, you know, what I'd love to discuss is a little bit about kind of your background. How did you get into this? People that do this always have some kind of interesting little twist or turn along the way, and love to hear what is your twist or turn that got you into running one of the most respected tourism companies in South America, definitely in Colombia. So tell us your story.
Thanks. Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. I think that everyone that I've met who runs a tour operator, who is in this industry to some degree, does it because it was a passion, or they fell in love with the destination, or they themselves went on a trip and they're like, I love this. I'm going to start doing this as a business or as my profession. So in my case, I was living in the Pacific Northwest of the United States in Oregon, and I loved living there, but there came a time where, and I don't know if you've been there, but for people who are listening, it's a famously known for being one of the rainiest places in the United States. It's absolutely gorgeous in the summertime, which is when we all get amnesia and forget how cold and wet and damp and dreary it is for the rest of the year. But after living there for almost 10 years, my wife and I at the time were looking at switching it up. And we really were wanting to move to a place where the weather was better, where we could buy some land, where we can have a totally different lifestyle. And she had already actually started looking at doing a 3-month trip to South America. That was kind of one of her lifelong dreams. And that was right about when we started dating and got married and everything. So it worked out really well. And I basically said to her, why don't we go do that trip and make it not only a honeymoon trip, but also a business kind of venture trip. Let's go figure out if we can actually do something in Colombia. So I convinced her to, instead of doing a whole 3-month trip around Latin America, we should just focus on one country. And then the impetus for that, of course, is that why Colombia? My mom is Colombian. So from a young age, I've been going to Colombia, and I knew enough about it, and I had enough understanding, and speaking Spanish fluently helped a lot. So I was able to convince her that we would do Colombia. But we didn't.
Hey, real quick. Where is she from originally?
She's from New York, from this area, from upstate New York.
Okay, she was obviously pretty open minded to have this, you know, come up with this idea of 3 months in South America. But I always ask people, especially around Colombia, it's like, what did she think about Colombia before she came? Was like, did you get some pushback on Colombia as a country, or
no,
was she
not at all about? Because she trusts obviously me that I'm going to be going somewhere that was going to be interesting. But also we did our research, right? Before we even started the idea of having the business, I actually started looking at information. So there's really good tracking that the Colombian government does and other places in the Colombian government, like ProColombia, that actually has information about, these are the numbers for inbound tourists. This is what we expect that's going to happen. So I started looking at all this information. Mm-hmm. And then I realized this was back in 2009. And I'm like, wow, there's a potentially really interesting untapped market here. Let's look at tourism. So I was in information technology. I was doing project management for big corporations. My wife is an occupational therapist. So she was in the healthcare space, and we had both done it for long enough that we wanted to change as well, right? So we wanted to change career, we wanted to change location. We wanted a total upheaval of what we were doing. And tourism is one of those things where there is a learning curve, but the learning curve is you're learning while you're doing, and usually you're doing something that's fun. So
makes it a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, the learning curve is not that bad when you do that. But so I said to her, look, I think we should start a business. I think we should go down to Colombia and really pitch and look for opportunities from hotels, tourism providers, anything that we could find out, and just network with people. And effectively, that's what we did. We literally had a plan to travel for 3.5 months. We went to all the major cities. We planned it. We left in December and we got back in March. So we planned it around all the major holidays through Christmas. So we basically we arrived in Bogota. We went to Medellin. We went to Cartagena. We went to Manizales for the Feria de Manizales. We were in Barranquilla for the carnival. We basically did as much of the touristy things that we could. And along the way, what we ended up realizing was two things. So first of all, we would tell everyone, we had business cards printed out. We would tell everyone, we are from the U.S., I'm Colombian. We're looking at starting a company here to bring tourists. And so they would always be like, wow, that's amazing. I know somebody who you need to talk to. So we made so many connections. We met so many interesting people who were just starting anything from an eco hotel to their tour operator walking tour. Or they're like, oh, I know a friend that owns a car. So basically all these things, right? Really started to organically grow. And so after 3.5 months, we had a nice portfolio of products that we could actually sell. We came back to the U.S., and two things became apparent really quickly. The first thing was that we needed to shift our focus to ecotourism instead of just general tourism. Because until we traveled there, before we traveled there, we didn't realize really the breadth and scope of the biodiversity, the ranked number ones for birds, for orchids, for amphibians, for pretty much everything that has to do with nature. Colombia's ranked number one. And then secondly, we realized that there were some bigger operators that had been there already, maybe for 2 or 3 years, and they were doing mass tourism. And obviously, there were the big operators in Colombia that were catering to the domestic and the Spanish-speaking audiences, had been there for 40, 50 years. So we didn't want to compete with them. We really wanted to focus on inbound, English-speaking, ecotourist type of travelers that are more focused on understanding the culture, the nature, and the whole aspect of what ecotourism brings to you, right? The communities and all those things. So we really quickly focused. And it was also a very good thing that we focused, because our original name was a nod to Putumayo Records. I don't know if you know Putumayo Records. It's a label out of New York City, and maybe even San Francisco. And it's based off of the international music. And Putumayo is a region of Colombia. And the founder of this record label was in Colombia in the 1970s and really loved that name. And our company was going to be called Putumayo Tours. No one in their mind could spell, pronounce, understand what that even meant. And I was like, this is a bad name choice. So I ended up changing that really quickly.
How long did it take you to figure that out before?
When we got back to the US with our portfolio of products and we started trying to pitch it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes people take 5 or 6 years before they realize they chose the wrong name. So it sounds like you were pretty quick.
Yeah, it was really quick because I knew what it was, but just having to explain it to people. So we immediately changed it to Columbia Eco Travel. Very clear, very easy. The only other issue there is that people spell Columbia with a U instead of an O. Oh. So I had to buy both domains to make sure that people wouldn't be redirected. All those things, which were, you know, as you learn, as you grow a business. So that was back in 2010. So since 2010 until now, we've been growing the business. But the second thing that became apparent, as I mentioned before, there was two things. First of all, was we need to change the name and transfer it to ecotourism. And the second thing we realized was that we actually did have to move to Colombia because of the nature of how the businesses were growing and there were the cultural aspects of doing business. So if you're used to doing business in a place like the United States, it's very easy to set up contracts and to have a really close relationship with your business partners, even if you're not in the same space. What I realized really quickly is that I would have to be down there, literally be in person, setting up these different agreements, and then really going through that process of hiring them, training them, doing a lot of things, and even mentoring them through their processes, because a lot of them had never experienced international tourists before, if at all any tourists, right? So this was a whole growth process. And so we weren't only selling the products and creating all these tours and experiences. A lot of my job, because we were partners in this, right? My wife and I, a lot of my job was to go out there and actually find the partners, train the partners, set the expectations, help them with their billing, help them with just figuring out how they actually need to.
How they could work with you.
Right. So that they could work with us, right? Because we were, a lot of these people were just single operators, you know, or even a small family, and they didn't even have the understanding of how to set up the legal process in terms of taxation and all those things. So all of that process was a lot of the learning curve that I had to learn myself. The business in Colombia, and then being able to replicate it and teach other people how to do that. So we could even just operate the business, right? So that was like the first 2-3 years. I remember our first client was a couple from Los Angeles, and they were so hesitant. They were like, we really want to go to Colombia, but are you guys for real? Are you guys legitimate? Are you like this whole process? And like, yeah, we have insurance, we have everything. We're going to, you know, charge you on your credit card, like all these things. And then they came and they loved it. Right. So, but that was our first client. That was a year and a half after we started the business. So definitely a lot of things there. And since then, obviously we've had lots and lots and hundreds of clients, probably even thousands now, and operate for bigger out businesses that send us clients that we run their business and their out tours for as well. So all that, but yeah, it's been great. And, I'm in New York now because obviously pandemic was a big shift and had to transition. But right now it's a really interesting opportunity to be more virtual than even before.
It's all that legwork you did to set up the business.
Correct.
Presumably that now allows you, you know, you've got good people on the ground, you better understanding of how you can communicate with them. So it's probably a good thing that you set all that up early on. Yeah,
absolutely. Most of our providers and the people that I, you know, we built really strong relationships with, that was, as you just mentioned, that was literally 2013, 2014. So they've been with us now throughout this whole time. And those who did survive the pandemic and survived COVID, we immediately reconnected with them. It's like, how are you doing? Do you need anything from us? What can we do to get back and start working together? Yeah. That was really good. And then now the perspective from my side is I actually see this as an opportunity to be in the U.S. So literally was just down at the New York International Travel Show last weekend. Just the face-to-face networking with operators and buyers in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
So the best possibility for me to just take a quick drive, do that, could be going to Denver, Los Angeles this next in for the other travel shows and other things. Where if I'm in Colombia, it really makes it a long trip, right? So I've got my people on the ground there. I've got all my staff that manages all the day-to-day operations, the sales, all the operational things. Right now, for me, it's really a benefit. And so I'm looking at that opportunity to be like, how much can I do to expose Colombia to more people, right? To more operators, more buyers, to more just people in general. And then what can I do to also bring more people to Colombia? Because it's always that two-step process. First is Colombia is really amazing. You really need to go. I think that you can account to that.
Yeah. And I can't remember if I mentioned since we started recording here that I'm actually in Medellin right now. So anybody listening. So when he says that, I hear everything he's saying, and I'm actually, because of my knowledge of Colombia, I'm quite impressed that you've been able to create what you have. The people here are amazing. And also I understand there's sometimes challenges. And one of the things I've noticed about people are they're very hardworking, and many people here will have 7 to 10 different businesses, everything from selling candy on the street corner to maintenance of houses, fixing cars. Like, right. I get the feeling like a Colombian, you can say, hey, I'm looking for somebody to help me with this. Do you know how to do that? They're going to say yes.
Right.
Like, well, whether they know how to do it or not.
That's a fantastic point. There's actually a saying. So you're right now in Medellin. And that's the Paisa culture. It's renowned now more than ever because there are so many famous artists like Juanes mm-hmm. and Alvin and Maluma. A lot of people that have been really put out there in the entertainment world that are from Medellin. So there's a whole kind of resurgence. But also places like Comuna 13 and other places in Medellin have really kind of been spotlighted for transformational social change and community change and a lot of things like that. But mm-hmm. additionally, all that being great, historically, the people from Medellin have always been the most entrepreneurial. In Spanish, they call it pujantes, so they're the most go-getters. And there's a saying that I love that basically you're not a real paisa if you give up. Basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But in Spanish, I'm kind of loosely translating it, but in Spanish, it basically says, if you don't know it, you make it. You basically, if you don't know what you're doing, you do it until you fake it until you make it. Really?
Fake it until you make it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the people I can attest to.
I'll always say, yes, I can do that. And then they just figure it out as they're doing it.
Yeah. They're very entrepreneurial. I don't think I've ever been any place where I've seen people willing to work as hard as they do mm-hmm. for such a small reward sometimes, to be honest. I don't know how else to say it, but I've seen people doing things here.
Service of helping people.
Yeah. It's
many so times cool. that I'm sure you'll have this experience is, oh, I need something. And you're in the middle of a place or somewhere and they'll just literally leap to your service to help. And then you're like, oh, what can I do to repay? It's like nothing. Why would I need something from you? I'm helping you.
If you get away from the tourist areas, it's hard to tip or anything. And sometimes I'm like, you know, I'll buy a coffee and a croissant and it's, you know, I'll say $8. We don't need to do $6, whatever.
It's $2.
Yeah. And I'll have, you know, maybe I'll give them a little extra just because that's what I have in cash or whatever. I don't expect change. And they look at me weird. Like I've had people chase me out of restaurants with money in their hands because I left it on the table. Right. They're like, oh, it's yours.
Yeah,
you got your money. And like that does not happen back home. I'm not saying that North Americans aren't honest, but it's
just a different culture. Absolutely different culture. Yeah. I've had the pleasure of also running a hostel that we started for 5 years and that closed right before the pandemic, which is kind of a blessing as well. But we had people from all around the world and they all said the same thing. Many of them were traveling, backpacking through Latin America, and they always said, I wish I would have known that Colombia was so amazing, so I could have spent more time here. Most of them had budgeted a month in Chile or a month in Argentina or whatever, and only like a week or two in Colombia. And they always said the same things, like, I'm so in love with this country, in love with the people, in love with the food. I don't like the food that much, just personally, but the food's good. The food's good. It's all natural. It's all local. That's really the best thing about it. It tastes so good. The cuisine mm-hmm. in general is getting better.
But Colombia is not known as the Mexico of South America or the Peru or Italy.
But this last year, four restaurants, two in Bogota and two in Cartagena, were in the top 50 best restaurants in the Latin America list. So getting good. Yeah.
Were they serving Colombian food?
Yes.
They're just curious.
Leo, which is in Bogota, Leonora Espinosa, who's a famous female chef from Colombia. She is sourcing all of her products from local farmers. And it's more like Nouveau Colombian. Like, you know how they have Nouveau Peru?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll call it Nouveau Colombian in many ways. A friend of mine owns Celele, which is a restaurant in Cartagena, I should say. And what he's done is he's actually spent months and months learning all the traditional cooking of the Caribbean coast of Colombia. And he's put his own hot cuisine twist to it. So you get a 10-course meal paired with all the different drinks, and it's just a fantastic experience. So they're taking fine dining and applying it to Colombian food and products. And mm-hmm. So that's really where the hit's coming from. Like, that's really where the success is.
And that goes back to what we were saying about, I don't know how to do it, but I'll figure it out. And that entrepreneurship and that, like, okay, the American tourists aren't that excited about the regular paisa, arepa, and the beans.
Beans and rice and arepa.
Yeah, we've got two dishes, beans and rice and beans. Which would you prefer?
Right.
So I can see that entrepreneurship and that ability to kind of try different things is really paying off. And you said something that really resonated when you had the hostel. You'd get guests and say, oh, I wish I'd known. I would have came here earlier in the trip. I would have budgeted more time for Colombia. And as soon as you said that, on a much bigger scale, and we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, was on a bigger scale, like, I wish I would have known so I could have budgeted more time. And I'm not talking about a specific trip. I'm talking about my life. Literally, I spent Halloween in the Parque de Caldas, mm-hmm. in the city of Caldas. There must have been 4,000 or 5,000 people in the park, and not a single one of them looked like me. And I was sitting there, like, my costume was gringo. I was gringo, man. That was, if anybody asked, that's what I was going to say. I dressed up as a gringo. I wore my shorts and my flip-flops. And no, not really. But it was such an amazing experience, from the kids all the way up to the adults. And I've been through a lot of Halloweens, and that was by far the coolest Halloween I've ever experienced. Mostly just sitting there at the little, at the tienda, sitting at the table, watching people. I bought a bag of candy. I was sitting there handing out. It was so cool. And I'd sent a message to a friend of mine who I haven't seen since I've been back on this trip. And I said, I'm so happy I'm back in Colombia. And I sent her a couple pictures. And I said, I wish I would have known 30 years ago. I'm 50. Because if I'd come here 20 years ago, oh my gosh. I mean, I'm happy with the direction my life has taken. I'm here now. But I don't think I would have left. So I get it. I had an opportunity.
That, yeah. Yeah. The truth is, though, 20, 30 years ago, you probably
went to
Colombia, because it's a totally different
situation. I know.
Not culturally and not those magical moments. The land of magical realism. Really, if you talk to anybody who's been to Colombia, there's that whole idea of magical realism, which made Gabriel García Márquez's book famous, and there's a whole campaign around that, and the whole Encanto movie, and like all that magic. I think it's really very real in Colombia. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely this essence of magic that happens because of the people, because of the culture, because of the nature, the exuberant nature that's there. All these things coalesce and make this really unique place. Mm-hmm. But 30 years ago, and I remember this because 30 years ago, I went to Colombia as a teenager, and people were still putting car bombs in front of banks, and people were getting shot in the street. And there was a lot of fear every day, because that was that crux, that really pivotal moment when the FARC were still very active and the government was very active and the cartels were very active. And there was a lot of things happening. But, really, in the last 10, 15, 20 years, that transition has been pretty rapid. And so I'd say in the last 10 years, anybody who's made the move, like in your experience, has been to Colombia, loves it, wants to stay there. And there's also just a ton of opportunity for anybody, really. But more importantly, in the tourism space, because Colombia is still very low in the numbers of inbound tourists. It's still, I just literally was pitching to a person. The first thing they asked me was, is it safe? Even now, with having more than 6 million inbound tourists in the last 2 years, there's still a lot of perceptions that need to be overcome.
There's so many things. I'm happy you brought that up. I'm going to say I'm happy you kind of called me out in a sense when I say, I wish I would have come here 30 years ago. You're right. That actually is that could reflect a little bit of, I'm trying to think of the word, but insensitivity. That's the word, right? Mm-hmm. So, because like maybe I should reach back out to my friend and acknowledge it, that when I say, I wish I was here 30 years ago, well, she was.
Yeah.
She was here 30 years ago. She's told me stories about, her mom forgot to pick her up after school one day, thought her dad was going to pick her up, whatever. She spent 3 hours sitting outside the schoolhouse with these ideas in her head that, you know, she was never going to see her mom again because of things like you just described.
Right.
You know, she grew up in that reality. She's the same age. I grew up in the reality of watching that stuff on TV. And Colombia is like, it was like Afghanistan or like, whoa, no, that's the negative stuff. And unfortunately, what happens and when that type of stuff ends, the news coverage ends, right? So it's like, and you're just left with whatever you saw last. If your last impression of Colombia,
there's no update.
Yeah, there's no update.
Like, Colombia is actually amazing. You should come and visit. You know,
so yeah. You're still stuck in your head of where it was. And it's a pretty vivid image if you lived it, for sure. And if you just, even if you just saw it, it's a vivid image. So I know that when I came, it was 2 years ago. I sold all my stuff, bought a one-way ticket. I was only planning to be around for a month or so before I continued on my journey. And I remember 2 days before I got on the plane, my father copied and pasted the entire State Department warning off the State Department website. Copied and pasted it into a text. I didn't even know you could do that. I didn't know you could make a text that long. And he sent it to me and said, son, I really think you should reconsider. And I'm like, wow. That was actually the first moment in my life where I thought, oh, I think I'm more adventurous than my father. He was a balloon pilot. He was a balloon pilot.
And he was murdered, robbed, who knows what.
Yeah. And a week later, I'm sitting on at a cafe drinking coffee, eating a croissant, thinking, oh my gosh, nobody knows about this. In my mind, nobody knows about this.
Oh, yeah.
You've been in tourism, so people know.
That, right? It's the most kept secret. But at the same
time, it's crazy.
It's like, you definitely want people to go, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the question is it safe? Because any place in the world has places that are not so safe. You and I have discussed that a little bit, but the perception and the reality are definitely two different things, especially for people maybe from North America. So how do you answer that question?
Absolutely. And that's the thing. When people ask me, is it Colombia safe? And I literally respond saying, I lived there for 10 years. There are places that as a tour operator, I've been to that I would never send a North American or any of my clients to. I've been there because I was looking for post-conflict operators, people who literally used to be part of the FARC or who actually are victims of that violence, who are now looking at tourism as an opportunity. That's literally why I've been to these places where you've got to drive for, you got to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and drive for 6 hours in a 4x4 vehicle up a mountain where the cliffs are precipitous. You know, you look down and it's like, you're in the mountains, right? So the Andes, it's like, wow, it's like a 3,000 foot drop or whatever. But yeah, those are the places that tourists will never go to unless they're like Bear Grylls or some ridiculous adventurer, right? So I explained to them, is like, you're going to be going to the most biodiverse country in the world. It's the happiest place on earth for most people. And we're going to send you to places that you enjoy, right? If you like to go bird watching, if you want to go look at animals in the safari, if you want to just go and eat amazing food or drink coffee or explore whatever you want, we're going to make sure that you're going to do that. And not only that, there are many more unsafe places around the world that you could go to. Nobody talks about Mexico still being relatively unsafe. Or
some places in the U.S.
Exactly. So it's really all matter of perspective, like you're saying. But the biggest thing is that one of the major reasons I think people do actually, who are feeling like Colombia is unsafe, but then really want to go because they've been told by a friend or a family member that they just went and they loved it, they usually do find an operator to help them with that. The second thing is usually the language barriers. If you don't know any Spanish, there are some places in Colombia that if you don't know any Spanish at all, it can be really hard to navigate and to communicate. Not in Medellin.
I think you're being, there's a lot of places in Colombia that if you don't speak any Spanish can be quite challenging. Can you do it? Am I a believer?
Yeah.
I mean, you can do it. They might not speak English. You can still survive most situations. When I came here 2 years ago, I knew nothing, no Spanish at all. Mm-hmm. And I managed to do just fine and fell in love with the place. But I'm also very outgoing, and I realized quickly that if I want to connect with people, if I want to make friends, I better learn some Spanish.
That's correct.
But yeah, so it's...
But in general, again, if you're coming as a tourist, now you had a totally different plan. You obviously also traveled a lot. You've been in this industry. You know how to connect with people. You know how to manage in this space. But if you're just like, I just want to go to Columbia because I really love this, or I've been told to go because of this, it's more of that comfort level, right?
But honestly,
the majority of the people that I've met in the last 6 months here in New York State that will walk, I'll be walking around with my Columbia Eco Travel cap on or my water bottle that got all my stickers. I'll be like, I just came back from Columbia. Randomly, they'll just poke at me. It's like, hey, I just came back from Columbia. Like,
yeah, people are excited to tell you, aren't they?
Super excited. Yeah. I'm like, where'd you go? Oh, I went to Cartagena just for the week and I loved it. And I want to go back. I'm like, well, here's my information. If you need any, if you have any questions, they can never say, oh, go with me. No, like if you have any questions, I just want people to be better informed so that they actually can have a good experience, right? But usually that's it, right? They'll be like, my friend just went, or we're going to do, or we just saw an article on New York Times or whatever magazine. They literally will just buy a ticket straight to Cartagena from New York City. It's a super quick flight. They'll be there for 3 days. They love it. They'll do all the independent traveler kind of things, and then they fly back. And I think for a lot of people, that's a good entry point. And then if they're more adventurous or they're more dedicated to looking at Columbia from like from a whole different lens of just like really going deep, then they'll do that next step. But I think that that's fantastic that even people are doing that. And usually it's those kinds of people like from bigger cities, New York City, et cetera, who also are used to quickly jumping on a plane to Iceland or to Europe, right? That they could just go and do things on their own. So those are the kinds of people that I think are really going to be pushing a lot more of the awareness around Columbia, and they're going to start telling more and more people. Because it's those independent travelers that are doing a lot of that work. And that happened
quickly.
Back in 2009, when I traveled to Columbia for the first time, all of the people that I would run into were backpackers, predominantly from Germany and the Netherlands. Yeah. And so all of a sudden...
Still a ton of them here, aren't there?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that was in 2009. And this was like, I saw zero foreigners. Like that was like only specific places. And it was very interesting because obviously now you can go to Cartagena, Medellin, and it's just covered. I mean, there's some places in Medellin that if you look around, there's more foreigners than there are Colombians actually. So
it's interesting that you say that. And in my experience, and you've got more than I do with the country, but in my experience, it's still awful good percentage of them are Europeans. You know, the German, the Dutch, the French. I see a surprisingly small percentage of North Americans, just considering it's so easy to get here, time zones, all that stuff.
If there are more Canadians,
yeah, more Canadians. But I've been to some, meet and greets, some language exchange type things, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of foreigners. Maybe they call them gringos, but they're not from the States.
Right.
Which is great, actually, if you're an adventurous traveler and if you just want to go meet people from all over the world.
Yeah.
Honestly, it reminded me of the Star Wars. It had the scene where they're in the bar with all the different aliens from all the different places and you hear all these different languages. Yeah, it can be like that in some areas of Medellin.
Absolutely.
I don't even remember what the bigger point was where I was going with that, but it's a special. Oh, that's where I was going. The only people that I believe that I've come across that badmouth their experience or their time, or they're super critical of their experience in Columbia. It's interesting. They fit a very particular demographic of what they're looking for when they come to Columbia. If you're coming to Columbia for those things that maybe you've heard about, illicit activities or things other than the nature and the culture. Those guys have it, and I'm going to say guys, help people if you're not sure what I'm talking about.
Right.
Those guys do have a tendency to complain about a lot of things, and well, this and that, and the Colombian people are dishonest or this or that, but it's only those people.
Unfortunately, the dark side of tourism, and Colombia is... I don't know if it's famous for this, but I'd say that it's famous for beautiful women, beautiful people. Obviously, we've trafficked in a lot of different illicit substances, and it's the big C, not coffee, the other one, right? So there's a lot of things that happen there, and I think that and from the operator side, from a professional and tourism perspective, Colombian government is doing a lot of work to combat everything from human trafficking to sex exploitation of minors and teenagers. And there's a lot of work that goes along that, but the demand is unfortunately rather high. And the corruption that goes around that is also rather high. So we're seeing more and more of that happening in Cartagena, more specifically. So you won't see it as much in Medellin. It happens, but Cartagena has become a hub. And so there's a lot of work, and there's a lot of organizations also from the United States and other places that are coming in to really try to help that. My point on that is that I think that the more that operators, individual people can do to help create more of the normal type of businesses and more of the normal type of experiences that people will actually enjoy, they will try to push some of that away and prevent that from happening. But well, it's a people, yeah. Because it's an easy sell. It's an easy sell, right? So it's always a challenge. And so I think it's just understanding that it's a reality. It's a reality in pretty much every Latin American touristy place that I've ever been to. Cancun has a very similar situation, Acapulco, right? So it's all about that. And it's just understanding that that's something that can be a damper also for people like me, right? It's like, I don't want to be in a place where I'm being offered things with it. Remember, I might be traveling with a tourist or something, or guiding a group, and all of a sudden people, you know, see things that make you uncomfortable. Then that's a perfect opportunity to discuss it and why that's happening and all the dynamics that makes that happen, to just bring more context to the reality of everyday life of a Colombian in many ways.
Right. And I think the Colombian people, my take on it is there's a tremendous amount of pride about being Colombian, and there's some, maybe some shame. They don't necessarily say I'm ashamed of, but there's some things that have happened in the past in their communities that they're not real proud of, but they're so proud to be Colombian. So the reason I'm bringing this up is anybody listening to this, especially if you're going to just go to Colombia and try and find your way around on your own, there's some topics that are kind of sensitive. You don't want to show up and say, oh, can I get a, the, there are people that offer tours, you know, the Pablo Escobar tour, that type of thing, but don't show up and just start asking about that. And so, you know, cause most of the people that you want to talk to probably don't want to talk about that stuff.
I would agree.
People,
yeah.
The people that do want to talk about that stuff, probably are not the people that you want to spend time with in Colombia. And if you're listening to this podcast, I'm pretty sure that's not you anyway, because that's not what we're about. So,
but there is definitely, and that's a good point to bring up, because there is definitely a lot of people who are offering those types of experiences and offering also, like, I've seen this, and so I can obviously do not condone it at all, but how to go and process cocaine, how to do these kinds of things, right? So, these are the kinds of things that are just not helping at all in terms of the overall international view of Colombia. Right now,
that's interesting. What you just said, I'm not gonna lie, is interesting on some level, but yeah, I can see where that's not good for tourism to Colombia.
Versus, for example, going up to the Sierra Nevada de Santa Marta, where the Kogi, the traditional groups of the Sierra Nevada, which are the Kogi, the Arawako, the Wiwa, and the Huancamos, live and cohabitate with all these different tribes, and the coca plant, which is a native and sacred plant to not only the community, but also in Peru and Bolivia, they utilize that as a sacred mother plant, which they utilize for their ceremonies, for a lot of different things, including alleviating fatigue and altitude sickness, totally different experience with the plant than what these kinds of dark tourism people are trying to promote, right?
So I'm so happy you brought that up, because I remember when my son first visited me here, and we went up to Parque RV, and there's a little shop on the side of the road, and they had coca leaf tea,
yeah,
or whatever. And I had only been here a couple of weeks, and I was like, well, honestly, I was kind of like, I did not understand. And my son's like, ooh, I want to try it. I'm like, no, your mom will never let you travel with me again. So it took a little while to get through that. So I'm happy that you're mentioning it, because yeah, when people come here, it's cool to get involved in that part of it, just because they use this particular leaf, you know, derivative of that eventually ends up being something that's not so good. I mean, we could say that about a lot of things, right? A lot of alcohol is made out of stuff that we put our peanut butter and jelly on, you know, I mean, it's just, and it's right, an important,
exactly,
important thing.
And so for me, it's more about that, right? So like, if you take And there's a lot of people, Wade Davis. I don't know if you know about Wade Davis. I actually am a big fan of Wade Davis. He's a Canadian ethnobotanist, and he came to Colombia in the 70s to actually study the coca plant. He was the first foreigner to actually come and actually do it in a professional laboratory type of way,
right,
to understand the plant and the not only the botany of it, but the ethnicity of it, like the ethno aspects of it, like the culture, the people. He's written a lot about it, and it's really cool to see that, and how that really is one of the really unfortunate aspects of a plant that is so fantastic for so many medicinal purposes, and it's been turned into something so devastating and so bad for so many people, right? Because there's a whole bunch of discussion around that. It's still happening. The record, we're at a record high of coca leaf production right now. It's really ridiculous. The amount of deforestation and everything that's happening in Colombia around that, the demand is still super high. So we can go into a whole conversation about how situations in North America and Europe are causing more demand, because there's just a direct link around that. But in my purpose right now is to actually work with organizations that are preventing deforestation, that are actually doing a lot of work to help these farmers get money from planting trees and protecting the forests instead of chopping them down and planting coca. It's hard because coca is you get good money from planting coca leaf. And so it's again, this constant battle of preserving nature, preserving places, having people enjoying them and having tourists pay top dollar, appreciating the whole aspect that they're contributing to. And then also building all that network of people and teaching them, training them, and having them also have the understanding of why we're doing what we're doing, so that they have a better outcome with the land that they have. So again, so many things we could have conversations about.
There's one more thing. I don't even know if you want to go there with this, but sure. One thing that does come up, it's kind of related, is other plant-based medicinal plants. Ceremonial stuff, ayahuasca, other
ayahuasca,
things like that.
Yeah, so in Colombia we call it yaje. Ayahuasca is so Colombia, just like many other places in South America, has a very strong shamanic tradition. You know, there's tribes in Colombia. I think there's currently still like about 56 tribes that are actively participating in the culture of Colombia, and they still are most of them coming from the Amazonian area, and they'll come to somewhere like Medellin. And then they'll set up shop, and they'll be like, okay, cool. For Colombians and for tourists, we have a space where you can safely do ayahuasca, or yaje, as it's called in Colombia. And they set up the whole experience for tourists and for locals, right? But it's very much ceremonial. So there's that. There's a ton of processes that if you go further south into Colombia, into Putumayo, into Valpes, in those areas where there's actually full communities of Amazonian tribes and stuff, they fully participate in that. It's hard to get in there as a tourist, but there's definitely opportunities to do that.
I'm curious, does your company assist people that want to have that experience or be exposed to that, or is that outside of your wheelhouse?
No. So yeah, we've never had anyone ask us for any of that kind of experience. In the 13-plus years that we've been operating, we've never had anybody ask us for that. But we also don't offer it, because for us, it's kind of a liability in many ways.
Yeah, no, I get it.
We know that if we offer you an experience that we've done and that we have some, expectations around, it could be whatever it is. It could be a mountain bike trip. It could be a water rafting trip. It could be bird watching. It could be a coffee experience. It could be whatever it might be, right? A culinary experience. We have some set parameters. If you go do ayahuasca, we have no idea what's going to happen.
Who knows what the outcome is going to be.
We know the location. We know the benefits and the amenities that you're going to be exposed, offered. Well, we don't know
what's going to happen. If my understanding, and I don't have experience with it, but my understanding is, even if all those variables that you're talking about are taken care of, it's a very individual experience.
Correct.
That nobody can control. Nobody can even tell you what you're going to experience. So I can see why you might not want to touch that.
So we haven't offered it, but we usually get people saying, I want to do this. For example, perfect example is, I just was talking to a guy last week. He wants to go to Salento. Salento has been on the tourist map for a long time. It's got the famous wax palms. It's become a massive tourist trap in the last 5 years. So what we said was like, you know, wax palms are everywhere. I have a property in Colombia that has massive amounts of wax palms. It's not just Salento. Mm-hmm. So we started looking around and we found another place called Salamina. It's in the opposite direction. It's got way more wax palms. It's an actual patrimonial pueblo. It was founded 125 years ago. It has all the beautiful architecture. And when we started sending people there, the people would come back and be like, they were blown away. They were the only tourists. Nobody spoke English. The architecture is gorgeous. The food is pretty decent. And then we would take him in a Jeep Willy, which is the traditional Jeeps that are found in the region, about an hour drive through these wax palm forests. And I'm like talking about like forests, not like in Salento, where there's like one or two here. It's like covered. And then you get to this family farm that they saw the opportunity. And it's just this family. And this guy learned English. He learned how to run his business. He's 18 years old. His name's Alex. And we send people to him. And he just like knows everything about wax palms now, knows everything about how to do the interpretation of the environment, learn English, like I just said. And people just love it. And so we started sending people there. And you can also adopt the palm. So for one time, $20 donation, they basically planted a wax palm for you. So all these kind of fun things.
So what should people know that aren't familiar with Colombia and don't know?
A lot of people really don't even know. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, hang on a sec. How's your signal look?
Not better. It was a little loose. It was a little soft a moment ago, but not better.
Okay, so for those that are listening and they hear you saying wax palms, I don't know much about wax palms. I know what they are, but what should people know about wax palms and why do people want to go to see wax palms?
Right. Okay, good point. Okay, so maybe we need to step back a little bit. Like I was saying before, Colombia is usually number one on pretty much the entire list of anything that has to do with nature. That includes palms. Colombia has, I'm not exactly sure the number, but it's over 250 species of palms. Wow. The most palms than any other country in the world. And one of those is the wax palm. The wax palm is the tallest palm in the world. And the reason why it's called the wax palm is because the leaves are coated with a thin wax. And there's about four different species of this wax palm. The most famous one is the one that you see in Salento. And the reason why it's also the national tree of Colombia. Technically, it's not a tree, but that's the national tree of Colombia. And because it was almost, it's critically endangered because they were using it to use the wax on Palm Sunday. And also, they use the leaves of the palms on Palm Sunday and also the wax to make candles and other types of wax products. So for many years, they would cut down these trees or they would let them die. But the most amazing things about these palm trees is that they are not only the tallest, so they can be up to 60 meters tall, which is, I mean, I don't know in feet because I'd have to do the conversion really quickly.
That's like 150 feet or something like that.
Yeah, they're super, super tall.
Pretty tall.
Right. So not only are they the tallest in the world, they're only found in Colombia and parts in small parts of Venezuela and Ecuador, but predominantly in Colombia. There's one bird that's the yellow-eared parrot that lives there. It's the only place that they will ever live. So that's their natural habitat. And then ultimately, they're the longest living palms of that size. They live up to about 100 to 130 years old. Mm-hmm. So slow growing, and then they live for a really long time. So they have some very unique characteristics. So it became the national palm tree, National Tree of Colombia, I should say, in 1985. And then now there's been this huge effort to reforest them and to protect the areas where there are. So that's one of the reasons why people, if you look up Salento, in Colombia, not in Sicily, you will see that there's all these wax palms, people taking pictures with them and et cetera. And it's an interesting landscape for sure.
All right. That's very cool. I have not been to that area yet. I have not seen a wax palm, but I will. It's just down the road for me now. So thank you for sharing that. I didn't know them. This place is just even in Medellin though. Like I remember I was here a few days and I was walking down the street and I heard some crazy noises and I looked up on the side of a building and there were parrots on the side. They sound like dogs. I thought they were dogs barking at each other.
I think they sound like cackling hens or something. They're just singing.
Yeah, just like this weird, like, and then I've seen like scarlet macaw. I remember I was up in one of the high rises at a WeWork working one day and I look out and this scarlet macaw is flying by. Yeah. And I'm in a city with 4 or 5 million people, right. And there's big stands of the bamboo. It's just amazing. So anybody listening to this, whatever fears, concerns you've had about it, I mean, you know, reach out to someone like Daniel. Obviously, they can help you address your unique situation, because not everybody is going to buy a one-way ticket and an Airbnb. But whatever's holding you back, I would, you will not be sorry. You will not regret it. Daniel, I feel like we could have 14, 15, 16 episodes just about Colombia. I probably will start a Colombia podcast because I love it so much. It's home. As I was saying to you earlier, I just got back here a couple weeks ago and I felt like I just got home. And so it's fascinating. What is there that I should have asked you? What did I fail to ask you? What do you want to make sure that people get out of this before we wrap it up?
Absolutely. Well, I think, first of all, thanks again for the invitation. It's always a great opportunity to share the love about and information about Colombia. And really right now it's like, go on to Colombia Eco Travel, our website, or even Colombia's national brand travel. There's a brand new campaign, and the campaign for Colombia is the country of beauty. And so the whole idea is really emphasizing on nature, which is obviously our core business and what we do. But there's so many more things. And I really think that people should be open to discovering places like Colombia, because as we said a moment ago, it is a well-kept secret. And when people do go, I mean, you're the perfect example, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've been there now, just recently and then before, and you're like one of the ambassadors now of Colombia, I'm sure.
And so many people are, like you were saying, though, like I'm one of them. I'm the one who's sitting in front of you right now.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, and especially once you go, all of a sudden you'll notice, like everybody else is, like you'll all of a sudden notice your friends on Facebook are going to Colombia, and you're like, I never really thought that much about Colombia, but all of a sudden everybody's bragging about it, raving about it.
So, right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, other than that, I mean, if anybody loves birds, like bird watching, anybody loves orchids or any type of flower, if anybody loves really good, well-made meats and other types of like that kind of food, not as good as in Argentina, but still pretty good, interesting cuisine. If you like amazing, amazing landscapes that almost like change around every bend of the road, there's places, I mean, you've experienced this, you're just driving and it's like, wow, wow, wow. It really is like that. And you know, it's just such a diverse and unique country in so many ways that you can easily spent 3 months and only discovered my first official real trip to Colombia as a scouting trip. I spent 3.5 months and I only really discovered less than a quarter of it. And said, living there for 10 years, there's only two spots that I didn't go to because they were just too unsafe to go to. But otherwise, mm-hmm. everywhere you go is just, everything's so majestic and so wow. It's like, it's just incredible. And I think that for people who can go, they should go. Or who would like to
mention? Yeah, I'm going to mention one more thing, because you said if you like birds, if you like nature, if you like meats and all this stuff. And I know that it underlies all this, and I know that you're thinking it, but I'm going to say it because from my perspective, I would say if you love people, you love people, I love people. I've been a lot of places, but if you love people, if that's the only thing you like, I would say that's enough to come to Colombia.
No, because
it is
the culture.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
The culture comes out from this exuberance of life, right? It's just an extension of all the life that you've experienced.
Yep.
People are happy. That's why it's always ranked in the top 2 or 3 happiest places on earth. People are so happy. There's 365 days in the year, and I believe that there's 347 days in the year in Colombia that there's some sort of festival experience of some sort of activity. It's a national there's 33 or 38, I can't remember exactly the number, national holidays. So there's a lot of partying going on all the time. I think we have the most national holidays, either we in Switzerland, somebody like that. Like every other weekend is a 3-day weekend. There's always a reason to party, there's always a reason to have a get together, there's always a reason to enjoy life. And that is the extension of the exuberance of life that you can find. And even if you don't speak the language, they'll figure out a way to communicate and connect with you. So
Oh yeah, it's so much fun. And as I'm listening to you as we wrap it up, I'm thinking, how lucky am I that I'm going to wrap up this conversation with you. I'm going to walk down the street now and get a coffee and a croissant or whatever, the galsa abunuelo or something.
Pan de bono? Have you tried the pan de bonos?
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. I've tried it all. If I see something at the panaderia that I don't recognize, that's what I'm going to get. And yeah, it's been amazing. But as I walked, it's 3-4 blocks away. I'm not in a touristy area.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I'll have 5 or 6 people say, you know, buenas tardes, caballero, como estás, you know, or whatever. There'll be some sort of greeting. Yeah. And that doesn't happen back home. I'm going to say that doesn't happen back home, but I've decided this is home for me now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's absolutely rude to walk down the street, other than the big, big cities. Even in Medellin, mm-hmm. I've said mm-hmm. hi to people. But yeah, it's absolutely rude to pass by somebody in the street and not say buen día or buenos días or whatever, just to say a quick hello. If you don't say that, people will think something's weird with you. Something's, you know,
yeah, they'll
think
you're rude.
And then going into an elevator, I don't know if you've experienced
it. Yeah.
Always, everyone goes to the elevator. They say hello to the entire group. When they're leaving, they say goodbye. Yeah. I've started doing that here in the U.S. And people are just like, wow, yeah, thank you. Thank you. I will have a good day. But I think that you need to spread more of that love, more of that joy. It doesn't take anything away from you to actually be nice, be kind, and just say hi to people. Look them in the eye when you're walking down the street. Get off your phone. Stop looking around. Just look at people. That's what I've started doing after coming back from living almost a decade in Colombia. I literally just say hi to people all the time, and you can just see them automatically.
Oh, it lights them up. It lights me up, you know, partially because I'm not so used to it. And I grew up in the Rocky Mountain West, where people are like, you drive down the dirt roads, people wave at each other.
Right.
But this is like a whole new level. And it's not just the buenos dias, it's the como estas, how are you? Like if you walk into a tienda, a shop, mm-hmm. to buy a pack of gum, there's this whole little exchange. Hola, ¿cómo estás? Oh, you know, estoy bien. ¿Y tú? Excelente, gracias. And then you start negotiating the business transaction.
Yeah.
And we have to learn this
always.
As someone from outside, we have to remember that, because like my natural habit is to walk in and say, I would like a Coke, please. Mm-hmm. And I forget that part. So you got to remind, you know, or if you're sending written messages.
Yes.
You know, if you're texting someone.
You don't say good morning to someone. Yeah. Like, what did I wait? Did you go to bed with me last night? That's like a typical response. Like, what did we go to sleep together last night? Why?
I'm a single guy and I'm dating. So I'm learning some of that stuff. It's like, you know, that very first crazy message.
There's a lot needs of to be. It's a very, very. So last thing I'll say, in general, the culture is, so for many, many years, it was a very closed culture, right? Nobody would come in. Nobody would leave except for people who are Colombian, because why would you go to Colombia? You had crime, you had gangs, you had murders, you had all these bad things. So they had to develop their economy internally. They had partners like France, for example, which was always a longtime partner, but in the UK and Ireland. But the economy was closed. Almost every single company that you see in Colombia is a Colombian company.
Yeah.
There's very little external. Then now there's more, but 10 years ago, you would walk in, or even when I was going as a child, nothing really. Everything was Colombian. So the culture is very closed, and it's just now opening up. So it's very conservative. It's very formal. There's a lot of formality. As you mentioned earlier, walking around in flip-flops and shorts, how many Colombians walk around in shorts? How many Colombians own flip-flops? Right? They don't. They just don't. Everybody.
Yeah, I said that as a joke, by the way. To anybody listening, do not. Yeah. It's not a great way to make friends and gain a lot of positive attention if you show up with your flip-flops.
Right. Well, I was always wearing flip-flops. So everybody would make fun of me. All my Colombian friends would make fun of me. It was like, why? Even I would show up to business events in flip-flops. Because that was kind
I'm
of
not as confident as you. I want to
that's my signature thing now. I think it's like because people started commenting that I was always wearing flip-flops. So I started doing that. So they
that's true. Like,
you know, I don't know if that was or a bad thing, but
it seems to have worked for you.
But you know what? It was 75, 80 degrees every single day. And I realized that I'd rather wear flip-flops and be comfortable than wear closed-toed shoes and not be comfortable. Just that's just me. And And I'm there to do business and to build relationships. I don't care if they see my toes or not, right? I don't care.
Ah, that's cool. I like that outlook. That's maybe I
yeah, so, to
reassess some things.
I think that if you're courteous, if you're kind and you're courteous and you're actually genuinely interested in people, like you're just saying, because they're genuinely interested in you, you have a great time in Colombia.
All right. Cool. Well, Daniel, I look forward to seeing you in person. I'll still be here in December, so let's make sure we connect.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure when people are going to listen to this, but I'm super excited to share it with the world because it's obviously one of my favorite topics with one of my favorite new friends. So, Daniel, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it very much.
I trust you enjoyed listening to the conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you're enjoying the Big World Made Small podcast, please take a moment to tell the algorithm by subscribing and posting a review so that others can benefit as well. I also invite you to take a quick trip over to bigworldmadesmall.com and join our private adventure travel community to receive new episode notifications, special access to our guest experts, and perhaps even some exclusive partner offers that we haven't discussed on the podcast. I'll publish another episode soon. Until then, keep exploring. It's the best way to make a big world feel just a bit smaller.